I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are author Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, Republican strategist Marcus Skelton, and NPR's political editor Ken Rudin. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas. Welcome to the shop. How are we living?
How are you doing, Jimmy?
Hey. Doing great.
Well, hopefully nobody's living in the undeclared villa in the Dominican Republic.
Oh, that ain't right. That ain't right.
Well, let's kick things off by coming back to New York, Congressman Charles Rangel. Now, as Michelle mentioned before, he was convicted of 11 ethics violations this week. And yesterday, he filed out the suggested punishment for those violations. Censure, Michelle.
That was the reference to the villa in the Dominican Republic. That was one of the things that he was accused of not paying taxes on. Ken can clear up that for us. And Ken, maybe why don't you just give us some of the details, some of the charges, what, using a subsidized apartment in New York as a campaign office?
Right. He got four rent-controlled apartments in New York. He got he did not report hundreds of thousands of dollars of income he made on this villa. I don't know if it was the Dominican Republic or the Notary Republic. I can't remember the name of the country.
Oh, man.
But yeah, sorry. But also the fact that he used his letterhead to attract contributions. Here's the thing. I think there's several things. First of all, he was the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. If the guy who's in charge of the tax writing committee doesn't know what taxes he's responsible for paying, that sends a very bad signal. Two, Nancy Pelosi, when she became Speaker in 2006, said she's going to drain the swamp of Washington. And of course, she was talking about Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff and the Republicans, not knowing she'd have to be talking about the Democrats, and that didn't go over well with her also. But also, clearly, Charlie Rangel was offered a deal, a plea bargain, basically, months ago. He could have taken it. He didn't. He showed arrogance. He showed bombast. He kept insisting that he did nothing wrong. And it was, by the time he did ask for mercy, he said, well, I'm walking out because I don't have a lawyer. It's like the guy who, you know, kills his parents and then says, please, I want to have mercy because I'm an orphan. I mean, basically, there are so many things he did wrong that he could have done better, and it didn't have to lead to a censure.
Hmm. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, he had too much swagger on the front end, and then all of a sudden he's pleading. Really? Seriously? He had 2 years to get his legal counsel together, and then now he's trying to plead his own case. It's a really sad turn of events, Ken. But you know what I'm wondering is, this censure, is it deserved punishment, or is it a heavy hand, or is it a light touch?
Well, certainly the fact is he was told to step down as chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, and he did so. He is obviously, you know, he's one of the more powerful members of Congress. The fact is his power is gone, and that in itself is a tremendous penalty as it is. But, you know, of course, expulsion was never going to be a part of the equation. That was Jim Traficant because of his own corruption. It was Ozzie Myers because of Abscan. Charlie Rangel didn't go that far, but I still think, and I think Cynthia Tucker alluded to this earlier, that that had he been more contrite, more admitting of what he did, he probably would have gotten a rebuke or you know, some kind of a rebuke rather than a censure. But censure is pretty powerful stuff. And now, when after Thanksgiving, he's going to have to stand before the well of the House and hear the charges being read to him by the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi.
Well, I don't know. Arsalan, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I should probably hand in the keys to my villa in the Banana Republic. But, you know, Charlie...
I shop there all the time.
Charlie Rangel, you know, I think that the punishment in this case did fit the crime. You know, obviously, you know, we had the midterm elections where a great portion of the American public, you know, was voting against the excesses and the, you know, patent corruption that they saw within both chambers of the House. And like Ken said, you know, Charlie Rangel, you know, was, you know, exercising a lot of hubris when dealing with this issue. And so I think in this case, you know, with the severity of the crimes and the way that Mr. Rangel had handled it, I think that it was a fitting punishment.
He said that in his defense, he did have an opportunity to speak to the committee after they had made their decision and when they were deciding what the penalty was. And he just said, look, whatever you decide, I hope that you will put in your report or take note of the fact that Charles Rangel never sought any personal gain, and said that, you know, I'm not corrupt, and that I would never do anything to bring shame to my family, my community. So, Marcus, what do you think? Well, do you buy that?
I absolutely don't. Come on, Rangel. Look,
Tell us how you feel, man. Go ahead.
I really am. $600,000 that you don't report to the IRS when you're head of the Ways and Means Committee.
Which is the tax writing committee.
Right. The tax writing committee is oversight. The Isaac brothers went to one of the Isaac brothers went to jail for the exact same thing. And then you look at what's going to happen to them. If I did, you know, if I got in trouble with my job, it's the equivalent of me going to a company meeting, they reading the charge and say, Marcus, you are a very bad guy. And this is supposed to be a huge punishment for Charlie Rangel.
Has to get right with the IRS. I mean, he doesn't not have to pay the taxes because he was censored. Right?
It says he does. We'll wait and see. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt that he'll pay now.
You think he should have been expelled?
No, I think what it is, and I express a lot of frustration that a lot of other voters feel, that Cornel West talked about it a couple of days ago. This kind of like legalized bribery and normalized corruption amongst Congress in general. And this is a prime example of that, is that they live by a different set of laws than normal folks. If you're the head of the tax committee, you don't pay your taxes for 17 years. I cannot pay my taxes for 2 years, and I'm going to jail. And they're not going to sit me in front of my peers and read a bad letter to me. So I think that's one of the things that is a growing frustration in Washington. That's, you know, one of the main reasons why Barack Obama got elected to president of the United States, because of this feeling that people have is that they're just doing whatever the heck they want to up here. And this is a prime example of it.
Well, it does beg the question of whether people should go to jail for failing to pay their taxes when the tax code is as complex as it is. But I do take your point. Mary Kate Carey earlier in the program said that one of the things this does speak about is the fact that the tax code is as complex as it is for everybody. And that's one of the things that people are frustrated about. Do you think that's a fair point, or do you think tough noogies pay somebody to do your taxes for you?
I don't think it's the Ways and Means Committee.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's the
There's an H&R Block on every corner, really.
You know what?
I'm just raising the issue for discussion.
Yeah, what about H&R Haldeman?
Sorry. Moving right along, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly conversation in the barbershop with Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, Marcus Skelton, and NPR's own political editor, Ken Rudin. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Now, Fox News contributor and star of a TLC reality show, Sarah Palin, is hinting at a possible presidential run in 2012. Now, more than hinting, actually.
I was going to say.
In an interview, and you're right, in an interview with ABC's Barbara Walter, she says she hasn't decided whether or not she'll run, but she thinks she has a good chance of winning if she does, Michelle.
Okay, and I'll play that. Do you want to hear it just so people can hear what she said for themselves? Here it is. Go ahead.
Drop it.
I'm looking at the lay of the land now and trying to figure that out, if it's a good thing for the country, for the discourse, for my family, if it's a good thing.
If you ran for president, could you beat Barack Obama?
I believe so.
Also, it's been a very good week for Sarah Palin. She set a ratings record when her 8-part documentary series, Sarah Palin's Alaska, debuted Sunday night. And then on Wednesday, well, there you go. It's been a good... The interview with Barbara Walters was on Wednesday, if people want to go back and check it out on Hulu. There you go. So, Obama Palin, smackdown.
I mean, but Barbara Walters, she's interviewed Elmo, too, and he probably doesn't have any delusions of grandeur, right? But anyway, that isn't a knock on Sarah. That's just like, wow, really? Marcus, now, you are a Republican strategist. Do you think Sarah Palin can win the GOP ticket, let alone beat President Obama head-to-head in the 2012 elections?
Well, I don't know about the general election, but in the Republican primary with a crowded field, anything can happen. And I think this is one of the things
really?
That a lot of people are realizing, and they are shaking in their boots to realize that if Sarah Palin could win this nomination. But the weird thing is, she's either loved or hated across the country. You see, as many liberals that don't like her, she has one of the highest-rated shows on television. Somebody's watching it. If you go to certain parts of the country, there are Sarah Palin bumper stickers everywhere. Now, for her being president of the United States, I'm a Republican primary voter. I'm not quite sold on that. She's got a lot of work to do that.
So just like Elmo, she's well-loved across the nation. So,
well, you never know. I say, look, if she doesn't know anything about foreign policy, Charlie Rangel doesn't know anything about taxes, anything is possible in this country.
Well,
here's
proof that anything is possible in this country. Bristol Palin is still on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
So obviously anything is possible.
She did better than me.
If all the people who vote for Bristol Palin could vote for Sarah Palin for the Republican nomination, or let alone President Obama in 2012, you're right, Marcus. Anything is possible. First of all, it's fair to say that even though Sarah Palin's numbers are not great, 44 approved, 47 disapproved. Those are the exact same numbers as President Obama right now. So, you know, you keep thinking that the Democrats would love to run against Sarah Palin. They said that about Ronald Reagan in 1982. Boy, I'd love to run against this right-wing extremist actor. And look how well that worked out for them. But still, look, there's a lot of time between...
Ken,
What?
No, that was a point well made, bro. I'm sorry. Go ahead, King.
No, I was also saying, but I mean, 2012 is a lifetime from now. Look back, just go back 2 years to 2008 when the Republican Party was finished forever and Barack Obama and the Democrats were going to run the country forever. And 2 years later, that's changed dramatically. So 2012 is a long way away.
A-Train.
Well, first of all, you know, to push back a little on my friend Ken here, you know, the main difference between the Ronald Reagan analogy is that, you know, he was running the seventh largest economy in the world and had 54 electoral votes that he could put in play.
And finished his term.
Right. Well, and
running
so,
California.
You know, for us Democrats, like, you know, the specter of a, you know, Palin-Obama, you know, head-to-head matchup, it reminds me of the words of the rapper Bone Crusher that we ain't never scared. This would be like Steve Urkel telling LeBron James that he could beat him in a game of one-on-one. And so, you know, until Sarah Palin knows that Citizens United is a Supreme Court case and, you know, not some local Tea Party affiliate in Wasilla, Alaska, you know, I would take that matchup any day of the week.
Mm. It's funny that she just it ignites such intense
both
feeling,
sides,
both
ways.
Sides. I mean, there are people who, like, will wait for hours online to gaze upon her in the same way that a lot of people waited for hours to gaze upon Barack Obama. And there are other people who just cannot get the words out without just falling into a foaming froth of hatred and vitriol, and that includes Republicans. So it's just interesting that she just generates so much.
And she's confident. She looked Barbara Walters straight in the eye and was like, "Yeah, she beat him." You know, that was, I think, the part that, you know, infuriates some people and excites others.
Well, yeah, that's a good point, because remember when she was asked, I believe, by ABC's Charlie Gibson whether she hesitated at all when she was offered the vice president's position with John McCain, she said, no, you have to be built in such a way that you think you can do it. And she clearly is. So it's interesting. Let me just jump in right here to say, if you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with Jimmy Israel, Arslan Iftikhar, Marcus Skelton, and Ken Rudin. Back to you, Jimmy.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? Before we go, this is our last barbershop, Michelle, but before the busy Thanksgiving travel rush.
Happy Thanksgiving, Turkey Day.
Gobble,
right.
Gobble.
That's it.
So we should probably talk about the TSA.
That is true. I do want to ask the guys, this whole issue around these new screening procedures, and one of the reasons we were thinking about this is that, you know, Thanksgiving is the busiest travel period of the year for everybody. And, I thought women were going to be the ones who were upset about this, you know, these intrusive or whatever you want to call it. Close scrutiny. I don't know what euphemism we're using these days to talk about what they're doing, but this thorough pat down. And a California man named John Tyner kind of raised the issue for a lot of people when he recorded this pat down on his phone. And this is what he had to say. Here it is.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to place my hand on your hip, the other hand on your inner thigh, slowly go up and slide down.
Okay.
I'm going to do that 2 times in the front and 2 times in the back.
All right.
And if you'd like a private screening, we can make that available for you also.
We can do that out here, but if you touch my junk, I'm going to have you arrested.
Classy guy. Keep it classy, homeboy. Wow.
So Arsalan's in Chicago, where he's already in place for the holidays. So I hesitate to ask if anybody came close to touching your junk while you...
Well, you know, for me, Michelle,
how do you think he got on this program?
Excuse me.
No. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Excuse me.
Well, the funny thing, guys,
I'll
is that...
I'll be calling,
you know,
my lawyer and my husband shortly, Ken.
Uh-oh.
To deal with
Billy's
you.
Billy's on line one.
That's
go ahead,
it.
Train.
Go ahead.
Well, the funny thing for me is, you know, here I am, you know, after September 11th, I was this 6'4", single Muslim male, and so I've had my junk touched at airport lines for many, many years, to the point where I used to joke with the TSA guys, you know, aren't you going to buy me dinner first? This whole, not only the touching of the junk phenomenon, but the whole full body scanner, you know, that we've seen, which basically shows every single contour of the human body, is something that a lot of privacy advocates and civil libertarians on both sides of the velvet rope, you know, are saying is a overreach by the TSA, and is something that Department of Homeland Secretary Janet Napolitano is probably going to be addressing in the very near future.
Listen, this isn't well known, but I've had to do concert and club security, and sometimes you have to pat people down and you have to touch them in delicate places, and it's for the good of everybody. So this whole thing with the TSA, if you know what, if you want to touch my junk, I say treat yourself. Don't cheat yourself.
Jimmy,
handle your business. Let's all just be safer, please.
Jimmy, can I be honest? This is the only reason I fly.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
But you know,
that.
But I have to tell you, but Jimmy gets highly upset. Don't touch his hair. That's what's funny about this.
Right,
don't
right.
touch his hair ever.
Absolutely not.
Cross the street. Okay, right. That's what's funny about it. Marcus, what do you think?
No, I think he got a wake-up call and getting searched one-on-one. That's what really happens when people, you know, get in trouble and get searched. You know, they, you know, some people go through buildings, they're not used to the normal winding. If you got in trouble or got pulled over on the street, this is the exact same thing that happened
so
to you.
So you're saying welcome to black man world, right?
I didn't
black
say
and brown
you
man
did.
World.
But,
okay.
But, you know,
it's post 9/11 world.
Yeah,
it's
but it could
world.
Go that way. Right, and, you know, right. he tried to use his constitutional rights. You know, you don't have to go through the scanner. To, if you don't want to, you can get searched. That's what a search is. You know, and if you want to protect yourself on the plane, that's the search you're going to have to go through. Now, there's a difference between fondling. Yes, they have to check up there. I don't know if you watch these lockup shows. People put stuff there. So you got to check and make
but,
sure there's nothing
well,
there.
I have an
interesting
hey,
now, question. Wait a second.
Well,
go ahead.
I don't know. It's a difficult question because I know that but, you know, we're not guilty. You know, we're not under arrest. We're not in the custody of... You know, the authorities. On the other hand, I understand both Jimmy and your point that there's a certain sacrifice that we all make in terms of privacy for the sake of the safety of all of us.
You have to pick your poison. Either, you know, get seen half naked or get groped. I mean, you got to pick which one you want. That's kind of how it is now.
What do you pick?
All right. Spread your arms and cough, bro.
I'd rather you not touch me. I'll go through the scanner and you can see what I got.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, this is our last get together with me, at least before Thanksgiving. So I just wanted to say happy Thanksgiving to all of you. And I certainly hope you all have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
You too.
All right.
And to you, Michelle.
Jimmy Israel is the author of The Denzel Principle and joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Arsalan Iftikhar is the founder of themuslimguy.com. He's also a legal fellow for the Institute for Social Policy and Understanding. He's joining us from Chicago. Marcus Skelton was here with us in Studio 4B. He's a Republican strategist. He's also a grants program advisor for the American Association of State Colleges and University. And Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. He was here with us in our studio in Washington, too. Thanks, everybody.
Peace.
Gobble, gobble.
Later.
Yep, yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.